Good morning, everyone. How did the first lap go? Did anyone got to the end? Or no one got to the end? I'm going to talk a bit about how to adapt your UI to different screens and different devices, because now it's a lot easier to deploy Windows apps on phones and PCs, tablets, Xbox, even HoloLens and the IoT devices. My name is Wesley Cabus. You can find my Twitter handle up there. I also blog at wesleycabus.be. I work at Real Dolmen, one of the biggest ICT firms in Belgium. And I've been doing professional development for over 10 years now. So let's dive into our presentation. Typically, when you hold your phone, you're not holding your phone over there, you're holding it in your hands and you look at your screen and you see an application and it's built for that phone in a normal size. If you open that same application on your desktop screen is sitting 40 centimeters away from you, so everything looks almost the same size, but actually it's a bit larger. If you would take that same app again on your Xbox, it would appear the same size because your TV is at the end of the living room, but in effect it's still larger built. This technique is what we call the scaling algorithm, and that's new in Windows 10. And it helps you to model your application just once by using something we call effective pixels. And then it will scale out for these different screens and resolutions. Here is a small video explaining what happens. So we have a small pixel. We have a font 100 points high, some smaller text. But when we view it in a screen on different devices, you will see that it more or less looks the same. But in effect, it's larger on each screen. But you don't have to deal with that. Windows is taking care of that for you. So what we're saying is ignore scaling, resolution, and dots per inch. Just use the effective pixels. And when we dive into XAML in the hands-on lab, you will see in your designer that you will have different screen resolutions and landscape and portrait orientation. But next to that, you will also see the effective screen size that you're designing on. So, what am I designing? How are you going to build your application for these different screens? Well, when you plan your design, and you want to have an application built for phones and tablets and laptops and maybe even for TVs, then you will typically best just focus on these devices. So a 5-inch phone, because most of the people that buy smartphones these days are going for the lower end of or medium end devices. 8-inch tablets, and then you design for a landscape, best also for portrait usage and for the tablets. If you want to test on larger monitors or for Xbox on TV, then you can also test it, but it's best just to focus on these three devices when testing. That's the easiest way anyway. And what we typically also see, if you've done any web design and you know about responsive design, is that you're not going to keep in measure all the different resolutions out there. You're just saying if a screen is at least this this size or this size, then you will use another layout or you will move things around in your UI. So you see here, it's a bit small on the screen, but it's the mail application on a phone, and a phone can be really, really small. And then if you have a larger phone like the Lumia 1520 that I have, you get a much bigger screen, so more things can fit on there. And when you move over to a tablet, you can have even more space. So if you have 720 pixels, you can see we now have a list of messages and the content of the email beside it. Finally, when we move over to desktop resolutions, you can see we even have the option to have multiple accounts. We can dive into menus without having to leave our inbox or without missing the content of an email. Now, quick demo. If I open up the calculator in Windows 10, this view is in effect the same view you'll see on your phone if you open the scientific set of controls. And when we enlarge the screen, you will see at a certain moment that we will get another column to see the previous calculations with it or to keep calculations in memory. And we can go even wider, and then we get more controls on the screen. If I go larger in this size, we will see that the font also increases to make it more readable. So that's what we are going to do later on. Not this complex, but something smaller. But this is how you can see scaling in effect. Now, some design techniques about how you can do this yourself. And I mentioned it already. If you're doing web design, you know responsive design. It's the thing in web design these days. And we have some rules or guidelines that can help you how to move things about or how to change your UI. The first one is simply reposition elements on your screen. Say in a phone, you typically have one column layout, but when you tilt the device in landscape mode, you can switch things to the next column. If you have a bigger screen, again, you can alter the design again, so you have three columns, or maybe four, maybe more. The second one, to resize, means that if you have a larger screen and you make use of, in example, the grid layout, you can let the columns and rows size with the screen when you go to a bigger screen. To reflow, also in a grid layout, means that you can have a content like, for example, an image. And an image sits in just one cell of your grid layout. But when you go in landscape mode, you can span it across two columns. Or you can span it across two rows. Or maybe two columns and two rows. And that's to reflow. Reveal is simple enough. Is on a very large screen, you can show everything in your UI. Also the more specific details or metadata. But when you go into a very small screen, you're going to hide the extra information, maybe put it behind a second button or something. But you only focus on the most on the content that matters most to the user at that time. So you hide it and you reveal it when you go in a larger screen. Replace means that you're going to make different UIs for different screens or devices. So when you go on a phone, you have a small screen and you design for that screen. But when you use a desktop PC, you can use a completely different layout. And finally, re-architect is completely rethink what you're going to do. And that's especially the case when you're going to go to specific devices, like an Xbox. You're not going to, you might not go using the same layout on a tablet than you're going to do on an Xbox, because everything is bigger. You also have a controller instead of a keyboard and mouse, or your hands. Maybe if you have Kinect, you can do it, but not everyone has Kinect, so you have to keep those things in mind as well. So here's an example of adaptive design. You see the Skype application, which unfortunately is no longer available on the desktop. It's still there on the phone. But when you make a video call, you see on the phone you have the big hang-up button in the bottom row. But on screen, on a bigger screen, that button would move to the side and become smaller because you don't have to use your finger. you can use your finger on some laptops if you're lucky enough to have one that has a touchscreen. But you see that you have more content there, so the buttons can go on one row then. And finally, we have a slide that shows how to an example of a tailored design when you have different views for different devices. So the calendar app on a phone will only show by default two or three rows, depending on the size of your phone, with dates, and then a list of events happening on that date. But when you go to the desktop, you can see that you have a much larger screen state, so you can show a calendar to quickly jump to different days. You have a lot more space to show an entire week full of events. And you can also have a legend there for the different colors of your calendars. So that's a different UI on the phone and desktop, instead of just adapting your UI. But enough of me just showing stuff. Let's dive into a lab and build ourselves an adaptive UI. If I get out of PowerPoint, that is. So if you have the lab bits downloaded, there is a folder in there called Adaptive UI. And you can open the Word file if you have Word installed, I hope. And this contains the instructions of our exercises we're going to do. Now, the first thing, of course, if not already, is opening Visual Studio 2015. And you can move things about on your screen by using the task view here. You can say, I'm going to move the Word file to another desktop, and then using Control Windows and then the arrow buttons, you can switch to your Word or Visual Studio. That makes it a bit easier to move about when doing the labs. And then after opening Visual Studio, I'm going to create a new project. So you go to File, New Project, and then in the templates you have Visual C Sharp, Windows, and then Universal.
Just to be clear, the goal is that you guys are trying this yourself at this point in time as well, and Wesley is going to guide you through the entire process. Okay. If you have any questions, just raise your hand and
I will appoint a minion to help you. I have a special minion from Antwerp, right there. So under C Sharp Windows, you have Universal now for Universal Windows apps. And we'll choose the blank app template. I've made a folder on my disk called Hole for the hands-on labs. And then you can call your app Adaptive UI. And then leave the option create directory for a solution enabled. You don't have to add this to source control, and the telemetry you can choose, but the internet connection was not that fast, so maybe just not enable this today. And then press the OK button. When that's done, because it might take some time, just verify that on the top of your screen your solution configuration is set to debug and the architecture of your solution is set to x86 for 32-bit solutions. And The first thing, if you run this now, you'll have a big white canvas of nothingness, but there will be a frame rate counter on top, and that's useful when you're doing really big UIs to test if your device is running okay on phones. But we're going to disable this right now because we don't need it, and it might get in the way of our designer when we view the thing we're going to make in while running. So if appxaml.cs is not open, you can go here in your solution explorer to appxaml and double click on the code file and then scroll down to the unlaunched method. And you see here, when you're building a debug version and the debug is attached to your solution, then the frame rate counter is enabled, and just set this to false. I'm going to quickly build this to get rid of all the errors. Maybe I should disable ReSharper to get rid of all the errors. Yeah, that did it. Okay. And then next, as Jan already mentioned as well, we have the main page to XAML. And this is our first page of the application. In this case, it will be the only page of our application as well. So when you open that one, you will see the designer popping up. And when that's finished loading, dun dun dun, you see here now a phone layout. You see also here on the top of the screen that you have now the viewer viewport of a 5-inch phone with a resolution of 1080p on a 300% scale. You can also choose different layouts if you want to. You can have, for instance, a tablet, a 12-inch tablet, or a Xbox resolution. But we'll stick with the 8-inch tablet for now. And you see also, and that's what I was talking about earlier, you have now a resolution of 1280 pixels by 800, but here in the, it's a bit gray. The effective resolution that you're going to design on is 1024 by 640 pixels. So let's start by creating in our grid here two columns. So type grid.column definitions. And add two column definitions with a fixed width of 500 pixels. And when that's done, we're going to add some assets to the assets folder. So here in our solution, we have an assets folder, typically containing the logos of your store application and other images or fonts or whatever you're going to use to make your application look better. So right-click that assets folder and use the menu Add Existing Item to add new images. And one of those images, or all of those images, if you unzipped the zip file for the hands-on labs in the same folder that I did, you will have a folder lab assets. If not, then find the correct folder, because there should be a lab assets folder in there, containing some files that you're going to use later on. But we're only going to need the airtime and the avatar JPEG files. So click on those and then add them into the folder. Now the airtime picture is going to be displayed in the first column of our layout. So beneath these grid column definitions, we're going to add an image. And point the source of that image tag to assets/airtime.jpg. So you see immediately, you should see the image loading up in your view. But right now it's just sitting there and kind of fits the best way it can at this moment. So we're going to let it fill up the column by adding stretch and the uniform to fill option. And now it tries its best to fill the entire column with our image. Notice, by the way, if you've never done XAML before, that you don't have to say in which column you're going to place this. By default, it's going to put the first element, or better, if you don't specify which column of your grid you're using, it's going to be placed in this first column, and that has index 0. So you can add column 0 here, but it's not required. Now, if you go to the Word file, we're currently at task 2, step 4. Da-da-da. And there you have a large piece of XAML that I'm not going to dictate. So please copy and paste the red piece of XAML. I'll disable this button. And add it underneath the image in your designer. So what we added here is a stack panel in the second column with a light blue background color. And the stack panel just stacks every element underneath each other by default. And we have the avatar image in there with the name of our user underneath, the name of the picture, the date it was shot, and then a description. If we now run this application, and you can see here, by the way, if I press the play button now, it will play on my local machine. You can also switch over to the emulator, the simulator for Windows 10, a remote machine, your Windows Phone device if it's connected with a USB cable, or you can also use one of the Windows 10 phone emulator images. But for now, let's use local machine, run it. It will first build it, and if you have no XAML errors, your image will pop up in a few seconds. And there we have our first attempt. This is not adaptive at all, because when I enlarge this view, you'll see that we end up with a huge blank space over here on the right side. If you make this smaller, our image does seem to adapt a little bit because of the uniform to fill option. But again, if we make this smaller, then yeah, we end up with only seeing the image unless you let your mouse button go. So that's not exactly what we are trying to reach here. So close the application and let's go back to Visual Studio. And let's add two rows to our grid layout. So again, here at the top of our grid, add two row definition and grid in row definition. And you can leave it like this. You don't need to specify any options. We're just going to add two rows that are going to get exactly half of the available space. And for we're going to change our columns. We're going to remove these width attributes. So the same thing applies to our columns. We have now two columns that are exactly half of the space available. And let's add a name to these columns. And the left one will be called left col. And the right column will be called, no surprises there, right col. So in our designer, you can also see that we now have four squares in which we can start placing content. And let's go back to the document. And in task three, step two, there's again a large piece of XAML, which I'm too lazy to type myself. So copy and paste that into your grid. And you can put this at the top of your grid. So what you pasted into your XAML right now are three visual states with adaptive triggers. And these will later make sure that we are going to adapt our UI when we only have at least 320 pixels of view state available. When we move over to a wider view, then we can apply these rules. And finally, when we have at least 1024 pixels of width, then we can use the final rules to make everything suit the largest available screen size. But when we're going to do this, we have to have names on our controls to move things about or to enlarge and stuff on the screen. So go back to the airtime image, the first image in our design, and give this one a name. I'm going to call this the hero image. I'm going to do the same thing for the stack panel. Also give this one the name, and this is going to be called metadata. It's a bit light bluish, but and the next thing we're going to do is we're going to remove from the image and the stack panel the grid column attribute, because we're going to move these around in our view, so we don't want to specify that here. Back into the Word document of the lab. On step four, we have a first set of visual state setters. So copy these. And these are the same for the first two visual states. So these ones apply to 320 pixels and also to 548. So go back to Visual Studio, and in the first visual state, add the setters underneath the state triggers. And again, in the second visual state, Now what's going to happen here is that for our hero image, we're going to change when our grid is when our view is going to be smaller. We're going to change the column span for the hero image to 2, so it spans over the 2 top columns. And the row span only will take 1 row. And the metadata will move into the second row by setting 1, and will also move over to 2 columns. Now, you can copy this again to the final view visual state. But there, it's a bit different, and I'm going to look into the file for a second. If you have a large screen, the hero image will only take 1 column, but will move then over 2 rows. Instead of moving sideways, it will move downwards. And the metadata will then move to the first, the second column of the first row, and will do the same. It will also take 2 rows. Before we visualize this on the screen, we will do some more steps here. The hero image, let's add vertical alignment center and horizontal alignment center. Because we're trying to scale it uniform to the content, the space we have, but we want to keep the main idea of the picture in the center. And then we have the final text block. And let's add text wrapping to this one. So we have text wrapping. And then use wrap whole words. And finally, if you... Let me just make this a bit bigger. You see that this is our stack panel, and it's stuck to the edge of our layout. So we're going to move this a bit to the side by adding in that stack panel a padding of 12 pixels. One final step, because we have not yet used our left and right column names. Let's go up into the visual state for the largest screen and add 2 setters. And we're going to target left col.width. And give it a value of 2-star. So when you're using stars, you're going to use relative sizes. And we're now going to say that this one gets 66% of the screen. And the right col will only get 33% of the screen. If we now run this application, you will see that in a smaller layout, the metadata is below the screen. And it's still not exactly what we want. But when we now enlarge the screen at a certain time, and you don't notice the flickering, the image will reassign itself to the 2 rows now, and our metadata will move to the second column, and we have now a somewhat better design. I'm also not a designer, so I just like the color blue. 90s revival. Now, I didn't see any hands so far, so I'm guessing everyone's still up to speed. If not, you can also go back now into that adaptive UI folder and use exercise 1.zip to have the same starting point, because we're now going to start exercise 2 and it builds further in this exercise. So what we did now is use adaptive triggers to change some of our UI elements when we have smaller screen or a bigger screen available. Let's now show one of the new controls in Windows 10, and that's the relative panel. So go to the stack panel and change that into a relative panel. And what the relative panel will allow you to do is to order controls inside that panel by using relative positioning. So you're going to say you have now this image here and everything is stuck at the top of the panel, and we're going to say in a few moments that we're going to move these texts below the image, and then you can use other things like put this to the right, put this to the left. But first, let's add a stack panel around the title, date, and description of our image. So I'm going to open up a stack panel here and move the closing part to the bottom. So we now have three text blocks inside the stack panel. And we're doing this because we're only going to move these three things together at once. And again, as for the visual states, we're going to need some names to move things about in the relative panel as well. So let's name the image avatar. And then the text blocks underneath with future proof is our username, so call this one username. And finally, our new stack panel will be called description. So you can see now that we have a little bit more spacing, but it's still not exactly there yet. So let's use the new feature of the relative panel to move the username below the image. So in the text box, you can now say relative panel dot below, and then use avatar. We're going to add something else as well. You also have the option to align things relative to each other. So let's align this using the horizontal center width option and also say avatar. So the text will now align its center with the center of our image. Notice that we're not yet moving the description stack panel. That will happen using visual states. So let's go back up to the visual state for the 320 pixels width and add two setters. Actually, three setters. And for the first one, the target is description dot, and then using the parentheses, go to the relative panel and then the right of property. These are, by the way, attached properties. So when you type grid dot column and relative panel dot below in XAML element, you're actually using attributes from an element above. So in the target here, you have to use this kind of expression to use the same thing. So we're going to tell the relative panel to move the description to the right of the empty control. So we're going to disable the write off in this state, because we're going to use it in another state, and we have to disable it again if we're going to use a smaller screen. And you can copy and paste this, of course, because we are going to set the below in our smallest screen. And we're going to move it below the username. And the last setter will give it a margin of 0, 12, 0, 0. So again, in the smallest screen, our description stack panel will move below username, not to the right of something, but underneath username, and we'll have a margin to space it 12 pixels below it. Now, you can again copy these three into the next visual state. And this time, we're going to clear the below option, because we are going to move the description to the right of the avatar image. We're also going to change the margin then, because we're not going to space it to the bottom, but space it to the side. So move that 12 pixels in the front, and then 3 times 0. And we're going to use the same three. So if you change these, copy these again into the latest, the last visual state. Now the next thing we can do, now we are only moving things around in our view, but we can also enlarge stuff. We can make, for example, the name, it's not visible right now because it's in white letters, but the name of our image is a default font size of 20 points. We can also make it bigger if we have the room for it. So let's do that now and go to the text block with the font size 20 and the text airtime, and give this a name, image name. And then again, because we're going to switch between different visual states, we are going to have to add the font size to the different states as well. We can't rely on this font size as a fallback. So in the first two visual states, add a setter with a target of image name dot font size and a value of 20 points. So you can copy this to the second visual state and again to the third one, but in the last one, we're going to make it a little bit bigger, and you're going to say use 24 points. So if you now run this, you'll see in the largest screen that we have our image taking up the most of the space, and then our content here has been relatively ordered, and our airtime text is a little bit bigger than when we're going to move into a smaller view. So now the text is a bit smaller, but it's still to the side of the image. When we move further, at a certain moment, using the relative panel, we will move the text underneath our username. And that's the relative panel. And this also can be used on a phone. If I quickly run this on a mobile emulator, I should have it running already. There is our application. So it's using, again, the same layout for the smallest available screen state. If I rotate my device, you still have some work to do. But that's for another session. That's the end of my lab about adaptive UI. Thank you for your attention and your time.